Welcome to the Mug Meeting Summaries Podcast. I'm Gilbert Detilieu. Our April meeting's main topic featured Adam Thompson talking about the PFSense firewall.
So, I'm here to talk to you tonight about PFSense. PFSense is a firewall. Technically, it's a customized version of FreeBSD that runs on generic hardware that implements a firewall. So it's a lot more than just a firewall. But for most people, it's just a firewall. Who would ever want to use PFSense? So right off the bat, why do you care? If you want a dedicated firewall, you'd like it to be running Unix because, you're here. You either need or want the level of security that something like OpenBSD would give you, but you'd still like a GUI to manage it because you don't feel like memorizing all the command set for yet another Unix variant. And you don't want to or don't have the resources to spend upwards of $10,000 on a commercial-grade firewall. On a commercial firewall, period. PFSense is arguably commercial-grade, but it is not a commercial offering per se. You do not have to pay to use PFSense. You can download it, you can hack on it, you can do whatever you want with it.
So can I use it to actually run on OpenBSD?
Sorry?
No.
It has its own boot startup routines. It's based on FreeBSD, not OpenBSD. I'll mention the PF bit in a minute. It's pretty much its own animal. You can run it inside a virtualization solution of some sort on pick your favorite platform. It's actually very common to run it inside VMware, but and as a matter of fact, that's what I'll be demonstrating in a little while. So what is it? It's a software-based firewall. It was originally forked from Monowall, which some of you may have used in the past, about 7 years ago. It's been undergoing continuous development since then. And in fact, there was a fairly large chunk of development at the time of the fork. So it's not Monowall, right? That's the key thing. It is not Monowall. Some parts of it still looks vaguely similar. You can, if you're very familiar with both, you can kind of see the common roots, but they're different projects altogether now. It's based on FreeBSD, and I believe it's based on FreeBSD version, kernel version 7, I think. So that's getting a little bit dated. The new version, 2.1, which is in beta right now, will be based on FreeBSD version 8. It was supposed to be based on 9, but they ran into some last-minute problems and ditched those plans. 2.2 will be based on FreeBSD 9, so if there's devices that aren't supported, like new Ethernet cards, sometimes they backport, and I'll talk about commercial support in a few slides. If you pay them, they will definitely backport the driver for you. But for most of you who are using it for free, well, you just wait another year and presto, it'll be running on FreeBSD 9 and your problems are solved. The big deal about PFSense is these two bullet points. The web-based management GUI, which is pretty slick. It's equally as good, if not better, than a lot of firewalls. Well, I run one firewall solution that's an HA cluster, two identical units running in active-passive mode. I think they cost about $180,000, and I actually prefer the PFSense GUI because it's less prone to having weird issues. It also doesn't use pop-up dialog windows nearly as much. And the other big deal about PFSense is add-on packages. Now, take a moment to explain that there's a downside to the add-on packages. This product will never be NCSA certified because it's based on Unix and because you can install add-on packages. So there's no way for them to guarantee that the firewall will never do anything except firewall. That's the whole point, is that it can do things besides firewall. But now, the lack of ICSA certification doesn't stop the NSA from using it internally. So, consider the source, and the other big limitation feature, depending on your perspective, IPv6 is native in the next major release, 2.1, not the current one, 2.0. Having said that, I've been running beta versions of PFSense in production for 3 years and I have had a problem once because I was running beta code. Where can I run PFSense? Well, generically, on any ordinary PC. Any standard x86 platform, you can run PFSense. That's both 32-bit and 64-bit platforms. You can run it on high-end servers, which I'm doing. You can run it on embedded systems with like 200 megahertz CPUs, fanless, and 27 gigabit Ethernet or 100 megabit Ethernet ports. A lot of people do that too. Spans the entire range of x86 hardware and runs acceptably on all of it. Their website has a sizing guide that says if you run it on this hardware, this is the throughput you can expect. Or if you want this much throughput, run it on this kind of hardware. If you need gigabit plus throughput, they're saying put like a 2-point-something or 3-point-something gigahertz CPU on it and make sure you've got PCIe or PCIX buses. No big surprise. Any commercial router that can do that is already giving you that anyway. Or they're giving you hardware, very expensive hardware custom ASICs that do it for you. No, take your pick. You can do VLANs. You can do LAGs. Notably, a lot of cheap firewall solutions don't like to do VLANs or LAGs, or they'll do one but not the other. Okay, so if you've been doing networking for a while, you may know what a VLAN is. If you don't, it's a virtual LAN. It's a feature of mid to high-end switches that lets the switch function as though it were multiple separate physical switches. So think of how VMware works for a PC. VLANs kind of does that for an Ethernet switch, sort of. It's an overgeneralization. LAG is a link aggregation group. This was also known as bonding, and I'm pretty sure I did a presentation on it about 7 or 8 years ago. You can go look in the archives. Basically, it lets you take multiple Ethernet links and use them in parallel as one big, fat, fast Ethernet link. So if one of those ports dies, your bundle keeps going, and you don't suffer a loss of service. If you have more than 1 gigabit of throughput, or more than 10 gigabit of throughput, or more than 100 megabit, more than whatever the interface speed is, it will statistically load balance all of your traffic across however many members there are in your aggregation group. The point is that it aggregates all of those links together into one virtual interface, so your software sees, you know, instead of ETH 0, ETH 1, ETH 2, your software now talks to, on Linux, it's bond 0, bond 1, bond 2, etc. On FreeBSD, it's something, I think on FreeBSD it's AE 0 for aggregated Ethernet. OpenBSD has lag 0. Everybody uses a different term. It's also the IEEE 802.3AD standard. So it's completely standardized. I love using VLANs and LAGs together because it means I have one logical interface from my firewall or my router into my big switch core. And all the bandwidth of every Ethernet port on my firewall is all shared. So I'm not limited to 1 gig in, 1 gig out. I'm limited to, you know, 4 or 6 or 8 gigs of aggregate throughput in any which way I want it to go. So that's why I use it. Multi-WAN, multi-WAN. Again, a lot of software-based firewalls don't really handle this case elegantly. Multi-WAN does include load balancing, so it can intelligently load balance across multiple ISPs. It can even do multiple connections to the same ISP. One of the add-on packages is BGP, so you can run BGP feeds to your upstreams if you need to whoever you're connected to. Rob? Yes, there is. It's OpenBGPD, and there is a GUI for it. OpenOSPFD is also supported. Multi-LAN is much simpler, but the point I want to make there is you're not limited to just WAN, LAN, DMZ. You can have WAN 1, WAN 2, WAN 3, WAN 27, DMZs 1 through 87, and LANs 1 through, you know, 375. It doesn't really matter. It can handle as many interfaces as you can cram into a box. And if you're using VLANs, that's 4,096 interfaces you can cram into a box. So, a lot. For the embedded, well, again, going back to that, all the way from servers to embedded, you can boot and run off Compact Flash, which is popular in the embedded market for small, low-power consumption devices. You can boot off USB, which is handy in a number of scenarios, and it'll boot off ordinary ATA disks, SCSI disks, and any RAID controller supported by FreeBSD 8, which is mostly useful in the high-end server era. All right. Arena, sorry. There is a special embedded edition that does not require either VGA or a hard disk. It runs entirely from memory, and it uses the first serial port as the console. So if you're using it to replace a traditional router, you can get an Alex. Alex is a very common, very well-supported board, or a Socris board, which we've had multiple presentations on here in the past, without VGA and without a hard drive, booted off Compact Flash or USB, take your pick, and completely headless solution.
Does it have to be x86? So what's the board ARM?
Today, it has to be all x86, either x86 or AMD 64 platform, one of the two. PPC and ARM support is dependent entirely on A, the level of support FreeBSD itself provides for the platform, and B, well, the usual with open source, right? Developers with access to the hardware and enough time and enough interest to make it happen. That said, that discussion has come up several times on the mailing lists, and the consensus is that porting it to PowerPC or ARM or anything that FreeBSD supports should not be very difficult. Because everything they do, the hardest part would be backporting some of the bug fixes, but most of their bug fixes have been ported forward into FreeBSD 9 by now. So if you're willing to work with the beta versions or the development code, it shouldn't be too difficult to do.
PowerPC might have some NDA issues.
That was the one thing that was identified. Shouldn't be a big deal, because everything's user-land,
right.
But that doesn't mean there's no NDNS issues. Yes. Yeah. When? Well, okay. First thing that's when-related, installation takes about 10 minutes. And if you're actually booting off Compact Flash or USB, you can, assuming you've set your BIOS up correctly, you can go from cold power on to running. I've seen it in about 90 seconds, which is pretty fast for a PC platform. It can replace most routers. The fastest I've ever heard of a pfSense doing is pushing about 5 gigabits per second. Supposedly it can do up to about 6 or 7 with the right hardware, perfectly balanced PCI buses, etc., etc. Realistically, if you're pushing more than a gigabit of traffic, you probably should be looking at some other solution. 1 gig, 2 gig, that's still doable. And if you want the features, sure, go ahead and do it, but you are pushing the envelope. And FreeBSD 8 does have some known issues with Broadcom gigabit chipsets, which is what, of course, every server on the market today comes with. So when you're really hammering the box at over a gigabit per second, sometimes you have to make tuning, do some specific tuning on the system, and if you're really unlucky, you're just going to get a hardware combination that's not work reliable, and yet will work fine if you're only pushing a couple hundred megabits through, and that's a FreeBSD driver issue so far.
Are you saying it'll drop or it'll fail in some way?
It will drop packets randomly, the interface will reset randomly, and in a worst case scenario being a Dell PowerEdge 850? No, not 8. Dell PowerEdge R210, which is a 1U low-cost server. The interfaces will come up, and as soon as you push more than about 200 megabits through them, they just die. The problem is universal with FreeBSD on that platform. So it's not pfSense, it's anything running on FreeBSD. Monowall would have the same problem, and apparently Linux distros have issues on that particular chunk of hardware as well. So. There is a recommended compatibility list like there is for every open source distro. You know, this is what we know works. This is what should work. There's nothing that absolutely doesn't ever, ever, never will work, but there's some things that maybe you should stay away from. I can replace most routers. Supports IDS and IPS via Snort. So that's one of the add-on packages. You can load Snort right on your firewall, which is the logical place to put Snort.
Yeah.
Obviously, if you're running Snort on your firewall, you're going to need a little bit more CPU and a little bit more RAM. If you've ever run Snort before, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about.
Remind us what Snort is.
Oh, sorry. For those who don't know what Snort is, Snort is an intrusion detection system. Again, open source, runs on Unix or Unix-like systems. It passively monitors all the traffic on the wire, looking for patterns that indicate attacks. And with pfSense, it has additionally the very much not recommended capability to proactively go and block source IPs that appear to be attacking. If you're willing to spend a lot of time fine-tuning Snort to decrease the false positive rate, go ahead. But out of the box, Snort will complain about pretty much everybody that talks to you.
Well, you're safe. That makes you pretty safe.
Well, Lawrence Livermore Labs proved that the absolute safest firewall in the world is known as the air gap firewall. You unplug the Ethernet cable from the wall and you leave an air gap. You cannot be hacked through the net. It does not have an on-the-wire antivirus scanner. So if you're comparing it to Untangle or most commercial firewall products, one thing it does lack, there's no on-the-fly AV scanning. If you use SQUID or another proxy, it can scan HTTP traffic, it can scan email, it can't scan arbitrary protocols online. And one of the features that I absolutely love about it is high availability state synchronization. So if you're familiar with OpenBSD, it uses PF-Sync, just like every other PF-based firewall, built into the GUI. And again, remember I said those HA firewalls I was running at a client that cost like $180,000? Half of that is the HA license. Not the hardware, the license to turn that feature on, and the yearly support for the privilege of turning that feature on. Free, no licenses required, it just works out of the box. You install it on two machines, they don't have to be identical, they just have to be similar, and you're off to the races. It also works very, very well, unlike some commercial solutions. So why would you want to use pfSense instead of something else? Those are the four main points. BSD licensed. If you're planning to resell it or sell it as a service, this decreases your exposure to licensing issues. Yes, this decreases your freedom, technically, as an end user, but as the intermediary, GPL, just you don't have to worry about it. Or, well, you have to worry a lot less about now. FreeBSD kernel and user land, that's a philosophical question, almost a religious question, if you will. If you're running Unix to begin with, some people say, well, I want to run Unix, real Unix, not this Linux stuff. Well, it's real Unix. It's up to you whether that makes any difference whatsoever or not. FreeBSD is renowned for its stability, like uptimes of 7 and 8 years are not unheard of, much more so than Linux is, and Linux is already renowned for its stability. Having said that, you're probably going to reboot this box more often than once every 7 or 8 years, because, well, it's a firewall. There's these things called security problems. They have it. It uses OpenBSD's PF packet filtering engine. That's where the name comes from, pfSense. It's the sensible way to use PF or something like that. Mm. Somebody thought that was cute 8 years ago, or 7 years, whatever. But if you use firewalls a lot, most people, broadly speaking, agree that PF is pretty much the state-of-the-art firewalling and packet ons today. There's almost nothing it can do that other solutions like IP chains can't. It's just, again, it's sort of a philosophical question. It is free, but if you need it, commercial support is available. The two founders of the project also founded a company to provide tech support. So for a moderate sum of money, they will do basically whatever the heck you want them to do to the product, with the product. They have a couple of extremely large contracts where they're supporting hundreds of pfSense boxes in a full mesh VPN setup. I mentioned that there's the embedded edition. There's actually four different variants. Well, three. Live CD and the installable ISO image, those are the same image. If you press I during the middle of the boot process, the live CD turns into an install disk. Big deal. There's the embedded image, which is designed so that you can just use DD to flash it onto a compact flash. If you've ever worked with compact flash media and you've tried to do this without a specially designed embedded image, you just don't go there. So if you want to run it on embedded hardware with the boots off compact flash, this is a major plus. You just DD the file onto your CF card, plug it in, boot, done. You don't have to fart around with the boot process. You don't have to modify your bootloader. You don't have to fix your bootloader. It just boots. And the memstick image is designed to boot off USB media, which has its own set of boot weirdness on a lot of PCs. Similarly, you just DD the image onto your USB stick, you plug it in, you boot. So again, you don't have to worry about fixing the, it's not ISO Linux, called SysLinux bootloader. You don't have to worry about geometry translation problems. It just works. So initial setup, which I'll demonstrate in a moment, is pretty simple. You boot from the media. If needed, you choose some boot options. Most people are just going to hit enter or F1 or whatever it is. Or just wait for the timeout and it proceeds happily on its own. You choose to install or continue with the live CD. That's what I said. If you press I, the live CD turns installed in. If you're using VLANs, set them up now. Pick which interface is your WAN, either physical or virtual. If you want to configure any other interfaces at this time, you pick them too. And then you switch to a web browser. That's all you have to do at the box itself. And now, I will attempt to demonstrate how to install pfSense in a virtual machine. Dan? Chris Buechler and Scott Ulrich are the two names. BSD Perimeter, the link I've got a link to them towards the end of the slide deck. Usually a list down the left-hand side.
Oh, that would be under view.
Well, you'd think so.
You
I'm not
view
seeing
customize?
View.
Oh, tabs. Tabs?
Oh,
yeah.
The next menu option. Okay, how did I hide it in the first place?
Oh, there's an icon on the top.
Mm-hmm.
Try that one.
That's it.
Thank
you.
There we go.
Mm-hmm. You live by the GUI, you die by the GUI.
You know, it's good, but it's also horrible. So this is booting off the ISO image. So as I said, you have a moment to choose some boot options. Like on old hardware, you might have to turn off ACPI, or you might have to turn off USB ports, or something like that. Is that readable from the back of the room? Okay. So this is an absolutely 100% normal looking FreeBSD boot process. Nothing special about this at all. Okay, and there we go. And you have 10 seconds to say, I wish to run the installer. VMware detected. The installer will make changes to tune this host. They're not joking. There are some things that they actually change if it detects it's running inside VMware specifically. I don't think it makes these changes if it's running under KVM or Xen or any other hypervisor. But there's things it does in VMware that improve the situation. Since I'm not doing anything really weird, I'm just going to go with the default.
Does it have like a VMware para-virtualized network driver or something?
Yes, it does, as a matter of fact, which I'm not using because this is VMware workstation and I didn't get into editing the VMX file. But yes, if you're running on ESX server, yeah, it will support all the para-virtual drivers. Quick and easy install, sure. We'll automatically install without asking any questions.
Sure.
Oh. And apparently, I don't have any virtual disks attached to this system. Let me find. Oh yeah, look at that! No virtual hard disk.
Easy to fix.
All right, we'll plug a hard drive into the system.
It was both quick and easy, just not successful.
yes, well. All right, now we get to watch that again. Sorry. So yeah, we'll, whoops, speed it up.
Enter.
Click to grab input. Click to grab input first. Yeah, even FreeBSD doesn't boot all that fast in a VM. Well, the other issue, of course, is that it has almost every network card driver known to mankind compiled into the kernel, so that it supports pretty much any network card FreeBSD does. Thank you. Muchas gracias. All right. Quick and easy. See, they lied. It's about to ask me a question right here. See, it asked me a question.
Another question.
And it's basically saying you have no partitions, you have no partition table, I'm going to fix this for you.
That's not a question, that's a table.
True.
Okay, and I've modified a partition. Whoops. Did it do something? No, it didn't. Yes. The dangers of live demos, eloquently explained.
Do you have a disk to play?
Yeah, I do. What the heck's going on? Custom. Format.
You're getting there.
Yes. Format. Yes. Partition it. Yes. Yes. Yes.
It's all good.
Okay. That's where quick setup is usually takes me. I've never had that fail before. I don't know what I did wrong.
Second time in about 3 years, like you said?
Well, no, that's actually the fourth time in 72 hours as I was preparing to do the demo. Worked fine at home. Perfectly, every time. Now, when you get to the end of this, it wants to know which kernel should I install? Should I install an SMB kernel, despite the fact I only have one core in this VM?
an embedded kernel,
which means no VGA required, no keyboard required, uses the serial port as the console, or the developer's kernel, which includes GDB. Well, the developer's kernel, yeah, no, I'm not that crazy. For a single processor, you actually install the SMP kernel, just like most kernels nowadays. All right, done. Reboot. Well, I think maybe I'd set this VM up to show you the live CD. That would be why.
No hard disk.
Default username was admin, default password and pfSense. Okay. On reboot, it will ask me to choose which one is my WAN, which one is my LAN, etc. This times out after a moment. I'm too impatient. That, by the way, was the standard FreeBSD bootloader, which lets you do a PXE boot after you've already loaded the bootloader off the hard drive. Just kind of a neat feature. I don't know why they built that into the FreeBSD bootloader, but somebody did. Yeah, one of the things that it does in a VM environment is it actually automatically implements CPU throttling, so it will only consume as much of your host CPU as required. Okay, so we've booted pfSense for the very first time. Network interface mismatch. Well, yeah, nothing mismatches with the something in my hardware. So, my valid interfaces are EM0, it tells me my MAC address, tells me what kind of card it is, so that I have a snowball's chance in you know where of figuring out which one is actually my WAN. First thing it wants to know is, am I setting up any VLANs? Now, I'm not here, but if I was in a normal VMware server environment, this is what I'd be doing. I'd be setting up VLANs right here, right now, so that I can assign my real WAN interface immediately. Of course, with VMware, you can also have VMware do the VLANing and show it up as 27 EtherExpress Pro 1000 cards. It's just giving you the flexibility. I don't want to set up VLANs. Note, pfSense requires at least one assigned interface to function. Yeah, they're not joking. This thing will not boot. It will not proceed past this stage unless you pick a WAN interface. Why it needs a WAN interface, not a LAN interface? Historical reasons. So, enter the WAN interface name or A for auto detection. If you're working on a physical box and you do A for auto detection, it prompts you to unplug all the Ethernet cables, hit enter, plug in the WAN cable, hit enter again, and it looks to see which link just came up so that you can actually tell which one is which. Right? Because if you've got an 8-port EtherExpress Pro 1000 card times, you know, four of them in your box, well, do you know which one is EM0 and which one's EM15? Who knows, right? So the auto detect is actually surprisingly useful. I'm not going to use auto detect because I only have one Ethernet interface, EM0. Now it wants the LAN interface name. Now, there was only one NIC in the system, so why it's bothering to ask me, whatever. I'm just going to hit enter because it's done. Actually, there's an important note here. Note, this enables full firewalling / NAT mode. Because I did not put a LAN interface in, this is not yet a firewall. This is just a FreeBSD host with a custom GUI. So I'm assigning LAN to EM0.
Unless no network traffic into.
Yeah, that's exactly what, and that's why they changed the install script to not enable full firewalling if you only enable the WAN interface. So Zoom, it goes off, configures a bunch of stuff. If you're interested in hacking on a firewall and doing custom stuff, the entire admin management system is written in PHP. Relatively clean PHP at that. I mean, you may hate PHP just as a matter of philosophical preference, but it is pretty easy to hack on. There is a command line, sort of. Very limited options. It's things like log out, go through the interface assignment again, change the IP address, reset the password, reset to factory defaults. Basically, your last ditch. All the things you need to troubleshoot the box if you can't get into it remotely is what you can do on the console, up to and including full shell access. Which, as I said, this is why the ICSA will not certify this as a firewall, because I can get full shell access. And if I can get full shell access, I can install a rootkit on my firewall. Ergo, it is impossible to secure this firewall. Mathematically impossible, maybe. As a matter of practical security, no, it's still a perfectly good firewall. And, scroll lock, page up, there we go.
Are all those options, I guess that's how you configure it if you're doing it serial, is that right?
The embedded console would give you the exact same options, just on COM1. So embedded,
you conceivably could do everything from there.
You wouldn't want to. You really wouldn't want to. Hang on while I...
It's okay. I wouldn't want to.
There's my mouse cursor. Oh. There's my mouse cursor. Just a minute while I switch monitor configs here.
Okay, so you'll notice that it's showing me what the DHCP address is that it picked up. Because I'm doing host-only networking, I'm going to launch another VM that is connected to that network to manage it. Apparently. Now what OS am I running? Okay, so let me go back here. 192.168.37.133. Switch in full screen mode. Launch Firefox. That was 133, right?
Yeah.
Thank you. This demo is not meant to happen today. Oh. This demo is not meant to happen because I forgot how to do the demo. Actually.
Pepsi's right there.
Yes, thank you. Self-signed certificate, as you noticed. Default is admin and pfSense. I log in. No, don't remember the password. And there's your default console. There's a regression, I think, in this version. I'm not 100% sure, because this used to automatically launch me into the setup wizard. Now I have to go to general setup, or sorry, setup wizard to get into the setup wizard. Not sure why this changed. So your setup wizard looks pretty much like everything else. pfSense.localDomain. No, I want to force those servers regardless of DHCP. Winnipeg uses NTP by default. You don't have to set that up. And first thing it wants to do, go away, is what kind of WAN interface do I have? And yes, I already set it, but all I really set so far was enough to get me into this interface. So now it wants to know, well, really, what's your WAN? It's DHCP, that's fine, I'm just going to leave it. By default, the firewall downloads a list of BOGON networks. In other words, networks that should never, ever, ever appear on the internet at large. This list does have to be updated every 6 months or so. It automatically goes and fetches an updated list, I think, every night, once every 24 hours, I think. So what it is it's address blocks that are legitimate, kinda, but things like US DOD that isn't connected to the internet. So if you see these addresses, it means someone's spoofing IPs, and, well, you may as well just drop the packet right now. So that's built in. The other feature that's built in, it's turned off by default because we're on an RFC 1918 network, is poof, I just blocked all private IP addresses. Poof, I just unblocked all my private IP addresses. It's a checkbox. So, do I care here? No, but if I was using this as, say, a core router for my ISP, I might just want to drop all private addressing on the floor. Don't bother filtering it. Don't bother running it through the firewall engine. Just can it. WAN support, by the way, DHCP, static, PPPoE, or PPTP, which is used in Australia if you're a Big Pond customer. Yeah. Set the password. I'm going to put it back to pfSense. Click reload. Reload in progress. And I'm pretty sure this has to be a regression in the current build that I'm running because it never finishes reloading here. And I get that. So you just go. I just go back, and maybe I'm just too impatient. Maybe it will finish if I leave it for 10 minutes. I haven't bothered. This used to work. I've opened a bug. It'll probably be fixed within the next month or two. Bug reports tend to get fixed pretty quick if they're easily fixable. If they're not easily fixable, well, it's an open source project. Sometimes the fix shows up 6 hours later. Sometimes the fix shows up 6 years later. You get what you pay for, quite literally. You pay them to fix it, it gets fixed. Firewall interface, firewall rules is your standard grid, just like every other web GUI firewall out there. It does support floating rules that apply to all interfaces simultaneously. So if that's an issue for you, this makes it real easy. VPN, I'll just mention, supports IPsec, L2TP, OpenVPN, PPTP. Take your pick. And it's both server and client for all four of those. So pretty comprehensive. Out of the box, without installing any packages, captive portal, which I'm going to attempt to demonstrate if I have enough time at the end. DHCP relay or DHCP server, not both, just one or the other. DNS forwarder, dynamic DNS. Dynamic DNS refers to the fact that the pfSense firewall will register its own IP address as a dynamic DNS name. If you're using its built-in DHCP, it will auto-register those DHCP clients in the DNS forwarder and return their address if somebody tries to look up those names. So fully integrated DNS DHCP, but only on the local scope. Dynamic DNS supports DNS-O-Matic, three versions of DynDNS, DHA, blah, 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 a whole bunch of DNS services, each of which has their own proprietary interface. I'm going to, as usual, plug EasyDNS, who I've been using for over a decade with no problems, and actually less than zero problems. They've proactively fixed things for me. IGMP proxy, like any good firewall, runs quite well. Load balancer. Out of the box, this is built in, inbound and outbound load balancing. This is inbound load balancing, server load balancing. So people hitting your outside IP or an advertised IP, this has a built-in load balancing, round-robin connections, sticky connections, all the usual features you would expect in a TCP-level load balancer. This isn't an HTTP-level load balancer. That's an add-on package you can install, but has basic monitoring of services. You tell it what your virtual servers are, you tell it what your pools are, and it just happens. OLSR is, this is basically them trying to compete with MikroTik. OLSR is a mesh routing protocol. pfSense can be a Wi-Fi access point if you have the right Wi-Fi card. If you buy that Alex board from PC Engines, there's a Canadian reseller, there's a link at the last slide. They will also sell you a Wi-Fi NIC that works with pfSense that can run in AP mode. So your firewall is actually your AP. You don't have to have a separate box to do it. Downside, because it's FreeBSD, it doesn't support 802.11n yet. It only supports G, and I think there's one G plus card that works. But, OLSR, which is where I started there, is a mesh protocol, so if you have a whole bunch of these things scattered in reasonable proximity to each other, they will automatically form a full or partial, depending on radio reachability, mesh, and do multi-hop routing completely behind the scenes to your clients. I think it looks like one-hop routing. I haven't actually played with it, so I don't really know how it works. This is very popular in Europe, and no one does it in North America. Don't know why. OpenNTPD, client and server, again, out of the box. PPPoE server. Not client, server. The only use case I have ever seen for this is hotels. Some hotels now put a PPPoE modem in every room so that they can run it over two copper pairs out of every room, one copper pair out of each room, not two copper pairs out of each room. Why would you want to do this? Well, it's one less box you have to run. And if you're in a hotel business, the less boxes there are, the better. And especially if you can make them small and zero noise and fanless and low heat and low power consumption, then you can just hide it under the front counter. Sadly, all too many hotels do exactly that. Oh yeah, if you peek behind the front counter at most mid-sized hotels, there's their firewall, there's their entire IT infrastructure, hiding, shoved under the front counter. RIP is supported out of the box, version 1 and version 2. OSPF and BGP are supported with add-on packages. SNMP supported out of the box. Wacom LAN. This is a Wacom LAN, I don't know what the right term is, requester. So what you can have is all the PCs on your network go into sleep mode. You register them with your firewall, and then you can remotely log into your firewall's GUI and send a Wacom LAN packet to that PC on the LAN, have it wake up so you can access it remotely. And it's just one of those like, oh, that's kind of neat. I don't know that I'd ever use it, but it's a neat feature to have built in. VPN status. Diagnostics. Yeah, there's a lot of diagnostic capability in this. Way more than there are in most commercial firewalls. A lot of commercial firewalls, it's either it works or it doesn't. Kind of like a Mac. And if something isn't quite working, you have zero visibility into why. This, like, all the way down to, okay, well, pfinfo is going to be kind of useless on a standalone system with no rules, but so there's my full pfinfo output from the OpenBSD toolkit. Pftop, if there was any activity here, oh, wow. Oh, it's showing me my admin sessions, right. So showing you all the sessions going back and forth through it. And I should point out, one of my favorite tools is built-in graphs, historical bandwidth utilization. So this is configured automatically for you. I don't have to do anything. So when Shaw and I disagree over how much bandwidth I used in a month, I have something to go back and check and say, no, I didn't. Or, oh, sorry, yes, I did. I'll be a better boy next month.
Is that persistent when you install it?
That is persistent from the moment you install. Remains persistent across upgrades. Does not get blown away by accident except by bugs, which has happened once or twice. And by default, it's RRD, so it keeps the data basically forever. This has actually saved my bacon. Quality. It also tracks packet loss. Again, out of the box, tracks packet loss to its default gateway. So you can go back after a week of really, really bad internet service and say to your ISP, well, I've been seeing an average of 4.8% packet loss all week. What did you guys do? This has also proved very useful to me in a commercial setting. Because, you call MTS with that and they say, oh, there's no problem on our end. The problem must be in your equipment. Well, mm-hmm. No. Or when I call, actually, no, that's Shaw. When I call MTS, I get, no, there's nothing wrong with our service, period. Everything's working fine, period. End of discussion. So now I can go back and say, well, no, actually, that's not true. And I actually have numbers to back it up. So a lot of the reasons I love pfSense isn't that it's the best firewall out there. No, if I want technically the absolute best firewall out there, I'm going to install OpenBSD and manage it all by hand with VI. This, however, strikes a nice balance between giving me all kinds of features out of the box, really easy to set up any other feature I want, and it's still a pretty darn good firewall. Let's go. No, not radios. I keep hitting the wrong key. And back to that. Demonstrate the installation. Okay, well, I demonstrated a little more than that. And I talked a little bit about the HA and clustering support. I said this is one of the coolest things about it, and this is one of the only prepackaged distros that I know of that supports high availability out of the box. I guess you could call this the killer app for running pfSense. That 180 grand that I spent on the commercial array, the one thing it buys me that pfSense doesn't is that commercial setup will do active-act. Both of my firewall boxes are passing traffic at the same time. The load is shared between them. If I was running pfSense, it's one or the other. And one is always a master, one is always a backup. And actually, sorry, one is always a master, all the others are backups. You can have, I don't know, Rob, do you remember how many devices can you have in a CARP array?
I never hit it.
I think it's like 64 devices. It's either 64 or 255, I'm not sure which. So if you run into crazy high availability, you could have a stack of 200 pfSense boxes all ready to fail over if that master one dies. Yes, this would be also known as massive or kill. I do it with two, a master and a slave, and that's always been enough. It uses CARP, same as OpenBSD. The only thing I mentioned about CARP is if you are running Cisco's HSRP protocol on the same LAN segment, be careful because they use the same ether type and they can confuse each other in a worst case scenario. Most of the time you'll be fine, just be aware that potential interactions do exist. On the master, you enter the IP address and the password for the slave, you hit apply, you're done. That's how much work it is to set up HA on a pair of pfSense firewall. You type in an IP address, you type in the password for the admin account on the slave, you hit save, and you're done. Well, okay, that's a bit of a lie. You also turn on all the checkboxes for what to sync the slave. So it's one page. I'll show you that page in a minute. Less than
the same VLAN as well.
Your interfaces, you have to generally have matching more or less in advance. So if you're setting up two pfSense boxes, during your initial setup, you would have configured the LAN, VLAN, whatever in advance. So I don't mean that that's all it takes to set up HA out of the box from bare metal, but from two working machines, making them a cluster is one page and two settings. Less than 3 seconds to fail over when the master fails. Less than 2 seconds to fail back once the master comes back to life. You could change that, but it's really not a good idea. If you want better than 3 seconds for failover, yeah, it's time to get out your wallet and go buy something commercial that uses a proprietary protocol. This uses CARP, which is sort of standardized, sort of, not 100%. And CARP really doesn't like you setting failovers to go faster than this. It can be done, and if you're very careful, you can make it work reliably, but not recommended.
Cross
that?
Cross-boxes directly.
Yes. Then you're getting into not so trivial to set up HA. So sub 3 second is trivial. That's the default. If you want to crank it down, like Rob says, you can do it. But then you have to have a dedicated interface to cross-connect your two machines, like literally just a crossover cable. Well, if they're gigabit, it doesn't have to be a crossover, but whatever. And then you have to go in and do some manual configuration under the hood. So live demo of HAs. I'll do this. Before I go into the demo, I'll talk about captive portal. Does everybody know what a captive portal is?
No idea.
Captive portal is, well, many of you, not everyone, but many of you have seen it. You go to a hotel or to a Starbucks or to a McDonald's. You connect to the network. You go to browse the internet. And the first thing that comes up is a page saying, you must accept our terms and conditions. Click accept. That's a captive portal because you are the captive audience for that portal until you accept those terms and conditions. And the captive portal, in this simple case, like say a McDonald's, is just saying, do you agree to not do really bad stuff while you're connected to our network? Yes, okay, fine. Starbucks, for a while, you had to enter a code that was printed on your receipt, so there was an authentication token involved. Some internet cafes do the same thing. Some of them give you a user ID and password. If you're using something like Boingo hotspots in airports, you get a user ID and password assigned to you. So there's varying levels of authentication. Some of them do chargeback. Some of them are flat rate. Pretty much every imaginable option is supported out of the box with pfSense.
Support for what?
Almost every imaginable option is supported out of the box with pfSense. And it can run against a local user database, or it can run against Radius, or LDAP, or... I'm trying to think if that's it. I think there's another one, but I can't remember what it is. I don't remember. I will attempt to demonstrate the captive portal functionality after I've demonstrated the HA functionality, and maybe we'll see that. I'm going to do the demo at the end of these slides. I want to talk about the competitors to pfSense. Main competitors, Monowall, its original parent project. Monowall still has a fairly good following because it's easy to set up and use. It's arguably slightly easier than pfSense. The GUI is a little bit better designed, a little bit less chaotic, but more or less it's got feature parity with pfSense. The big deal used to be that Monowall would only run from CD. It had no persistent storage. It could not use a hard disk, even if you had it. So you couldn't do things like run Squid on Mono. That was actually why pfSense came into existence, was so that you could use the hard disk. Having said that, they've rewritten most of their project in the last 7 years, so it's a perfectly viable option. OpenBSD itself, there is no GUI. That's its main downside. Some people think that's its only downside. Well, and you have Theodore. That's another big downside. No integration. So if you want to integrate LDAP, Radius, proxy server, captive portal, etc., you're in for a fair bit of work. On the other hand, you have near-perfect control and near-perfect security. About as close to perfect control and security as you can get on any commonly available platform without going in and writing the TCP stack yourself. What's that?
And like the wrong TCP stack.
Well, that's the thing. Like OpenBSD is considered to be as good a reference implementation as exists today. Its TCP stack is generally, not universally, acknowledged to be better than what's on most firewalls costing $500,000 today. But it's a pain in the butt to use. So convenience, security, right? It's always a trade-off. The other thing that's popular right now is Untangle. It's Linux-based, not FreeBSD-based, full-featured. The main problem with Untangle is the free version is pretty limited and you pay for features. Whereas pfSense, you don't pay for features. All you pay for is commercial-grade support.
On Tangle, on the other hand, you get support with the features. The other one I didn't mention here that you might think is a competitor is the MikroTik line of firewalls, the router boards and router OS. But again, it's not quite free. So a lot of people look at that and go, no. But not quite free, I think, is $49 for a basic license. So it's cheap and it's a viable option. Some links before I get to the demo. The main website, pfSense.org. Ooh, big surprise there. Portal.pfSense.org is their commercial support, which is backed by BSD Perimeter, the two co-founders. And by the way, if you're really desperate, both of the co-founders, or minimum one of them, comes to BSD CAN in Ottawa, like in Canada, pretty much every year. So if you're absolutely desperate, you can just go corner in there. I did that last year. And I assume you pronounce this Zaggle. I really have no idea. But that's the Canadian reseller for the PC Engines product family, which includes those Alex boards that pfSense runs beautiful on. They also sell SoCris if that's what turns your crank. That's all there is to the slides. Now I'm going to attempt to demonstrate high availability.
10 to 20 minutes.
I got 10 to 20 minutes? Okay. That should be just enough time. And I just hit the wrong key again. What I have on my laptop... That says VMware, which is connected to the internet. Okay, it's kind of a crummy diagram, and I should have put it in the slides, but I didn't, so sue me. I've got an Ubuntu VM connected to a private network that the two pfSense instances are also both connected to, and then those are NATed through my laptop. So we should actually have internet connectivity here. In theory, start up the master, start up the slave, shut down this crippled test instance. Oh, that's how I got rid of the toolbar before. I just clicked the close button. Bye-bye. pfSense. Okay, so I'll wait for this to boot. This is already running. When did having the numlock key on become a problem for typing in passwords? Huh. Anybody seems, know?
Laptops.
Good point. I hadn't thought of that. Are these up yet? Not quite. Yeah, this isn't, by default, this is not the fastest booting firewall in existence, but it's still pretty darn fast for a firewall. La, 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 la. The configuring CARP settings is probably the slowest part, and this is waiting for the both machines to come up and figure out that they're both alive and figure out who's the master, who's going to do the work. And I don't know how well this is going to work through the IBM internet connection. So far, so good. Oh, and starting package, OpenVMTools, another piece of integration with VMware, just to make it even happier with VMware. Now VMware can do controlled shutdowns of the firewall if you're doing like vMotion or anything like that. It's well supported. Oh, no wonder that was loud. Okay, so... 50.50? Is that right? Let's try 51. Yeah. Oh, I think I probably turned off HTTPS. Yeah, I did. So 51. 52. I don't know if you can see this. Actually, I can zoom in. You are on the latest version. Auto updates. And in fact, where is it? Firmware. There's manual, there's auto updates, you're on the latest version. If you want to switch to the development tree, you just change the default auto update URL to the development snapshots, save, go back to the home page, or I could have gone back to the auto update tab there. Oh look, there's an update available. That's as much work as it takes to start tracking the development snapshots to get full IPv6 support. And as I said, I've been doing that for years with only one real problem, and that, I think, what was the problem? I had intermittent connectivity for a day before they fixed it. So not a very risky thing to do. If I go look at, I go unzoom first, and there's your CARP. So there's my CARP. I have two virtual IPs. So the firewalls are 51 and 52. My virtual IP, the non-existent piece of hardware that is the high availability firewall, lives at .50 on both subnets.
And this one is the master for both. So if I go look at it on here, backup for both. Okay. And let's switch to... I'll do this with... Let's fire up something that streams. Cross my fingers, hope this works. Radio. This is probably not going to work with beans through the IBM connection, but we'll give it a shot. Yep, not at all. Awesome. Anybody know of anything that is kind of streamy that works over HTTP?
Live.
Sorry?
If you have Flash.
TwitStream?
Yeah,
radio.
URL? Flash web stream.
Twit.tv. You live in front to get there.
Twit.tv.
Ted?
Okay. Yeah, okay. All right. Apparently that's going to take forever. Dash A, dash, what's the interval? Oh, there it is. 1216837. That's oddly rhythmic. And not really what I want. Let's do that. Ping dash F. Everybody know what that does? That's a flood ping. So the ping command in Ubuntu, and I'm going to turn that down because it's really annoying. The ping command in Ubuntu is sending an ICMP echo packet to the virtual interface on my laptop, so the other side of the pfSense boxes, as fast as it can, and the instant it gets a reply, it sends another one. So there's none of this wait once a second to send a ping, it's as fast as it can. So I'll turn that back up. And in case you hadn't figured it out, it's sounding the system beep for every packet it receives. So this is, there's my master.51. I'm going to virtually trip over the power cord. One, two. There. And that's, so at maximum speed, I just dropped, 200 packets roughly. Oh, exactly 2 seconds is what that was, because it defaults to 0.1, and that's as low as it'll go, I think, unless I do something special. So I think that was exactly 2 seconds to fail over. So the failover just works, really. There's not that much to it. So setting up HA, I create the virtual IPs here. So yes, there's more than just the one screen that I talked about, but not much more. So I create the virtual IPs. I define them. I say they're of type CARP, which is the failover protocol. I go to the CARP settings page. I turn on synchronized states. I tell it which virtual interface to use or physical interface to use for the HA traffic. If I set this, it'll sync all my firewall states to a single host. If I leave it blank, the default is directed multicast. So this is what enables multiple pfSense machines to all back each other up. Synchronize config to IP. This is blank because this is the slave machine. If I set it on both the master and the slave, bad things happen. Mm-hmm. And I set the username, which is by default admin, no problem. I set the password, and I tell it what to synchronize. Users and groups, certificates, rules, firewall schedules, aliases, NAT, blah, 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 blah. And a whole bunch of the packages, but not all packages, but many of the add-on packages integrate into this screen and auto-sync their configs to the slave as well.
Are these all check default, or did you check each individually?
I don't remember. I've actually forgotten. So when I said, you know, and okay, you click the check boxes. So if any of them aren't checked, maybe you have to check them. So HA was, like, it was that simple. While I'm here, packages. One installed package, the OpenVM tools. List of available packages. First thing on the list, asterisk. Because everybody wants to run their phone system on their firewall. I make no comment as to the advisability of this route.
You don't have to deal with that.
There is that. And that could be a major consideration, come to think of it. Here we go. There's a couple of different backup tools. There's several things here that let you monitor bandwidth usage. I love this one, Blink LED. So if you have an LED on the front panel of your box that you want to blink in time with network activity, You install the daemon, and it blinks the LED on your front panel every time. And you can set it to do things like blink on rejected packets, blink on dropped packets, blink on IDS attacks detected, or just blink on any traffic at all. Country Block. This is a legacy app. Oh, apparently there's a new version. All right, fine. Dan's Guardian, so that's your filtering system for squid proxies. There's a full-blown DNS server. I don't even know what some of these things are, quite honestly, because I've just never had to use them. Oh, free radius, right? Because I want to run a radius server on my firewall. Several, multiple options for HTTP load balancers and reverse proxies. IP block list, okay, yeah, like there's... Oh, the antivirus, HAVP antivirus proxy. So it's ClamAV, but you have to be running a proxy in order for it to have something to scan. LCD proc, so if you have an LCD on your machine, blah, blah, blah. Main scanner, like I said, you can scan SMTP as well. NTOP, NMAP, which sort of makes a perverted kind of sense to put on a firewall. Where is that? NUT, UPS. So you can have it auto shut down if you plug a UPS into it or over the network. NRPE, so you can monitor with Nagios and get all the, like, from the horse's mouth level information. If you're using OpenVPN, this one's kind of handy, the client export utility. You set up all your OpenVPN stuff on the server, you click export, and it gives you a package that's installable on Windows or Mac OS. Like, the user just double-clicks the install.exe, waits 60 seconds, poof, they have a working VPN. So that's quite nice. Oh, there's at least two different versions of OSPF. Awesome. Okay. Yeah, like the list goes on and on here. A lot of proxies. Captive Portal is what I was going to show you. So where are users? So first thing we're going to do is create a new user. And I'm going to call it user with a password of user. The user. No, there's no expiration date. I'm not going to worry about expiration date. Save. No, don't remember my password. Now I go to Captive Portal. Enable the Captive Portal. Enable the LAN for it. No limit. Idle timeout. I don't know. Yeah, blank is for no timeout. Do-do-do-do-do. Pass through credits. All this talk about credits. You can actually use this in a point of sale setting where you people buy internet. Either so many minutes or so many megabytes of internet access from you. You can integrate it with your retail POS system for issuing voucher codes. It's quite powerful, actually. Pass-through Mac auto-entry. So you can have, as soon as one person authorizes a given computer, everyone else can spoof that computer's Mac address and get through. Obviously, that's not what it's... Sorry, not what it's really meant for. Authentication. Actually, I'm going to leave it with no authentication at first. Yep. Keep in mind that I'm on a computer behind the firewall right now. This should show me a Captive Portal login page. Should. Maybe not. Oh. Let's go have a look. That checkbox. There's the problem. Yes, we were using IBM's crummy DHCP or DNS server again. Changing DNS takes a minute for some reason. I don't really understand why.
It's not an
Is it? Is it really? It's just MTSs? Okay. The crummy DNS. Okay, yes, that would be why. I know exactly why now. Anyway.
Well, who manages the firewall? Who manages the firewall? What is that?
Seriously? What was that last octet?
Eight.
28.45.
Sorry?
28.45.
Oh, .28.45. So, I had to authenticate before I got internet access. You know what? I'll bet you. Yeah, no idea what's going on there. So there was Captive Portal. That was really, like, that's the minimum possible setup. Now, I have done one bad thing here.
Mm-hmm.
I have made changes on the slave while the master was down. When I bring the master back up, any changes that get synced automatically, poof, gone. It stays in sync with the master, not the slave. So I'm not going to bring the master back up right now. Yes, I could, but I would have to do so very carefully to make sure that the master actually did not become the master again. How would I do that? Virtual IP, go to carp. Yeah. Yeah, all I would have to do... So yeah, I'd have to go into my virtual IPs and change the base number to a higher number than my master used to have, and then it would not automatically take over when it came back up. That's standard carpisms, nothing to do with pfSense. That would also be a very good idea. Yes, yes it would. What else was there in there? Enable logout. Per user bandwidth restrictions. Oh yeah, this thing also has full layer 7 aware traffic shaping, which is insanely complicated, so I'm not going to get into it right now. That's about it. The one, just traffic shaping I wanted to mention because it's built into the captive portal. So if you're sharing, you know, 1.5 meg DSL connection out in the country from MTS, you can enforce that nobody's going to use more than X amount of that. So, you know, for the next guy who wants to open an internet cafe in Domain Manitoba, you can not have your entire system swamped. That's about all I have to tell you about tonight. That's a fairly comprehensive overview, love that term, of pfSense. Questions?
Well done.
Seriously?
Server on that? How does it do authentication? Is it per user and backup by setup location?
I think so.
And you can back that by LDAP, right?
Sorry?
You can back that by LDAP. You can make the machine back by LDAP, and then OpenVPN will back by the machine, right? Okay.
Yep. Yes, I'm pretty sure you can do that. Not 100% certain, because I hate OpenVPN, but I'm pretty sure it was there. You can do it with PPTP, you can do it with IPsec XAuth, so I'm sure you can do it. Yeah, no, ultimately the big win with pfSense is that it's so well integrated.
That's it for this podcast. Thanks for listening. For more Mug Meetings summaries, or for more information about the Manitoba Unix User Group, check out our website at muug.mb.ca.